Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Union Federation podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We got another great show for you as we cover all things Star Trek and the Orville here on the Union Federation. Of course, right now we are in the midst of covering Star Trek Prodigy, and on this episode we will be covering episode 15, Masquerade, and episode 16, Preludes. But I cannot drive the Protostar by myself. It just takes too many hands. We got a small crew this week. You know, holidays are going on. The flu's going around. People are in and out. In Kevin Reisel's case, he's under severe jet lag after coming from a land down under. But so we let him slide this week. But do not worry, because we do have, of course, our favorite ship's counselor and our top-notch holographic captain, the lovely Amy Nelson, is with us. Amy, it's good to see you. You are coming off a huge weekend of college football, which we know you love. You love in Utah. Pulled a surprise and beat USC. And once again, you'll be headed to the Rose Bowl this year to watch the Pac-12 championship or the Rose Bowl game. I mean, Amy, that's all coming up roses for you right now, isn't it?
It is. Second year in a row, listeners. Could not be happier. My Utah Utes are doing so well. And yes, I've decided to go to the Rose Bowl because they really do have a chance to beat Pac-12. Or the Big Ten, that would be Penn State. And do you know what, Kyle? Was very interesting on Twitter. One of the my listeners, you know, cheers for Penn State. And so I'm like, come to the game. I mean, it's a lot farther, obviously, from Pennsylvania.
Yes, Penn State does travel well.
Yes. So I'm hoping, I said, listen, that would be so fun to have a little meetup. So listeners, if any of you are going to the Rose Bowl, let me know and let's have a little meetup.
Speaking of listeners, I do have something I want to ask you about, Amy, and I'm kind of springing this on you. But there's some happenings over at the BQN. You guys have a new show?
We do have a wonderful new show. And what a show. It's called Trekspert's Quiz. Davey Willett from Down Under writes questions. He has three rounds, contestants. It is so much fun to listen. And what I'm finding is that when I'm listening, I know the answers that no one knows. And then like when they answer, I'm like, oh man, I didn't know that. So it's so fun and screaming at your radio as you're driving. It's great. So go check that out over on BQN.
Yeah, I've been watching, following things on the BQN, making sure you guys are not assimilating the rest of the universe. I mean, you're doing pretty well within the Trek universe itself.
We're trying.
I do have one other question for you. Now, You were at the Pac-12 championship game in Vegas, but you mentioned something about a certain Christmas tree that got your math mind running. I got to know more about this.
You know, you just see the most bizarre things in Las Vegas. So I'm not surprised, because I've been here now 14, 15 years, and I'm just not surprised. But what a treat it was. I went in, it was the Aria Hotel. They had this massive, I don't even know how huge, but like massive column with these rows of numbers and different sizes and different fonts and different colors were these single digit numbers, so 0 through 9. And it was this like digital math Christmas tree. It was so beautiful. I had to stop and take a picture. So if you follow me on Twitter or in Facebook, you will see I posted it there. But yes, a math Christmas tree. Who would have thunk?
Hey, I figured they just had it on the Discovery. I mean, you know. See, everybody else I podcast with gets to go on these fun adventures. Me, I just stay in the editing bay, at least on my end. Did I disappear on you, Amy?
Yeah, you froze up there, so you might want to start that over again for me.
Well, as I was going to say, we do have a little bit of Star Trek news to discuss. So without further ado, let's get into a little bit of Trek news. Unfortunately, this goes into the category of not great news. Actually, about 50 minutes before we started our recorded, the story broke. Kirstie Alley, of course, the legendary actress who was on Cheers and many other movies in the 80s, and of course has her own place in Star Trek history, passed away after a short battle with cancer at the age of 71. kind of still trying to process a little bit of this, because like I said, it just broke about 15 minutes before we came on to record. But Amy, Kirsty definitely has her place in Trek history.
She absolutely does. What an amazing job she did in Star Trek II. she really made an impact. And I was fortunate enough to see her when she came, I think it was the only time, to Star Trek Las Vegas. And yeah, it was pretty amazing to hear her talk, because her work just is so expansive. I mean, I loved her so much so, yeah, in Cheers and what was that?
She did that show Veronica's Closet for a yes. really long time too.
Yep. That one was good, because she was a little bit heavier then, mm-hmm. and she had this love-hate relationship with her weight, and especially with Hollywood,
yeah.
who judged her for her weight, for putting on a few pounds. And so at that time, and I really related to her. She was definitely a female actor that I could relate to. So I'm sad to hear and...
Yeah, I think one of my favorite of her like 80s comedy run that she had too is a movie she did with Mark Harmon called Summer School.
Oh my gosh. I think I've seen it, but yeah, it's a comedy, right?
It's a comedy. Mark Harmon plays this teacher who gets basically at the last minute sucked into summer school, and he's just with the most craziest bunch of students ever. A couple of them are like horror movie fans and doing all these crazy effects and stuff, and she's like the serious teacher who's he's pursuing through most of the film, and finally, you know, at the end they have the romantic hookup and everything like that. But you're thinking about this, like Kirstie Alley and Mark Harmon in peak, I think this was movie was 85 or 86. That's two of the most beautiful people in the world at that point.
Yes, they were definitely in their prime.
So, but yeah, Kirstie obviously playing Lieutenant Savick in Wrath of Khan set her own place in Star Trek history, and she will be greatly missed. A phenomenal actress. I know towards the end of her life, she would found herself in some controversies, but you know what? We don't look at that. We look at what she brought to us, and it was a lot of great work and amazing things. So rest in peace, Kirstie Alley. With that, guess what, guys? We are here to talk about Star Trek Prodigy, and Amy, we have a couple very revealing episodes this week. A lot of things happening. So without further ado, first and foremost, we're going to be diving deep into episodes 15 and 16 of Star Trek Prodigy on this episode of Union Federation. So if you have not had a chance to watch them, go on Paramount Plus, give them a watch, come back, finish off the episode with us, because I got a lot of thoughts about what's going on, and I'm sure you do too, Amy. But with that, let's engage the transporter and start away mission number one. And of course, for this away mission number one is episode 15 of Star Trek Prodigy Masquerade, airing on November 24th, 2022. Amy, would you be so kind to give us the episode mission log?
Yeah, but before I do that, can I ask you, because, you know, sometimes the titles are very revealing, and this one to me, why do you think that they titled this episode Masquerade?
I think because of Dahl and finding out what we find out about him, and, you know, trying to figure out himself and everything that's going on with that. Mm-hmm. And plus the reveal at the end of this episode too. Because there's a major reveal at the end of this episode. Okay. Somebody was running a masquerade in this episode since they've appeared in this on this show. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay, well, the episode mission log. The Protostar stops for repairs at a starport in a Romulan neutral zone. Admiral Jellicoe denies Admiral Janeway's request to enter the zone in pursuit, but orders Dauntless to destroy the Protostar if the Romulans try to steal it. Geneticist Dr. Jago informs Dahl that he is a human hybrid experiment, augmented with 26 other species. Dahl reluctantly accepts an implant to unlock the augments. I can make you better. The Dauntless enters the zone after concluding the Romulans are trying to steal the Protostar. Romulan agents learn they need the captain to gain control of the Protostar. When they find the crew, O'Connor leaves, and Dahl subdues them using his new abilities. The Romulans continue to ambush the crew as they return to their ship. Janeway fires photon torpedoes at the Protostar, but has them diverted after the crew repels the agent. Zero removes Dahl's implants, and he returns to normal. On Dauntless, Essentia reveals herself to the Diviner as another... of those people.
Vow Nakat.
Vow Nakat. Thank you. In disguise, accompanied by a new and improved Dreadnought.
So, Amy, this episode begins what this episode and what the following episode, a lot of revelations about our crew and also the situations going on around our crew. First and foremost, we get the big reveal about Dahl and what he is exactly. And I find that very fascinating. But before we dive into even all that, what were your first thoughts on this episode?
You know, I really enjoyed this. I did get a little sad for Dahl and very relatable in that feeling like when he's defeated and when you feel like you're not good enough. And it's all through the episode, like right at the beginning when he was, you know, looking at O'Connor, I wish she looked at me like that, you know. So I'm wondering if there's a little love interest.
I think for Dahl, there's been that there since the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the first I'm picking up on it. And I'm like, oh, I hope they don't. Will they? Won't they? You know. But I thought it was great to see O'Connor still coming back. That was really fun. It was a lot in this episode. What are your initial thoughts? I know I'm rambling, so.
No, because rambling's fine because there is a lot in this episode. My initial thoughts were, I'm very fascinated now by Dahl, knowing that, finding out what he is. I'm a little shocked that we're finding it out still in season one. I thought this might be one of the mysteries they go on with for a little while. I thought maybe the season two would be, okay, let's find the secret of Dahl. But it makes me very interested now as to why Starfleet tagged him like they did with his species from a few episodes ago. I felt horrible for him in the aspect when he finds out he has no parents. He was basically born as a science experiment. I think that's a lot for anybody to handle. But you're talking about basically somebody who's a teenager. And we see that with his jealousy in this episode, his feelings of self-doubt, and then to have that thrown on top of you. And to then be given away a quick way, an easy way, even though you know it's probably, there's more to it than meets the eye, but you're in such an emotional state to improve what you think is improve yourself and reach your full potential without really earning it. And because of the depression state he's in, gets taken advantage of in that way. I thought everything with him was just so well done in this episode. But I love the other dynamics going on, the Romulans and everything going on with the Protostar and Janeway. And of course, Amy, too, I'm going to ask you the big reveal at the end that Essentia is another Vow Nakat herself and with a dreadnought. That one came way out of left field. I had no idea that one was coming.
So I have a question to talk about that. So with Essentia being a Vow Nakat, does that mean that Gwyn isn't because the Diviner created her?
They address this, and I think it's in the next episode they address it, something about the Diviner breaking the rules and creating a prodigy.
Right. So is Essentia a true...
I think she is a true member of that race. I think Gwyn is too, but she was maybe not like just indoctrinated from in a because Petri of her situation. Of yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, that was an absolute shock to me.
Yeah.
Amy, I don't know if my jaw was on the floor. I was like, what?
Yeah. And yeah, she pushes that little button and then what the reveal. And I really did enjoy seeing another one of their species because we only know that the diviner, and he doesn't look like Gwyn. That's the weird thing. So I'm wondering how he transformed, and we'll talk about that next episode. It's so hard with these two, you know, we're discussing together.
They tie into each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some Romulans.
Okay.
Well, you had something else you want to bring up first.
Yeah, I do want to circle back to Dahl with his big reveal. Is that, 28 different species created by Eric Soong. So we love that. That's that Picard connection, which I absolutely love. And we learn that he's this augment and that it's recessive genes. And I'm like, okay, why would Soong look at and try and pinpoint just recessive genes? Was this a first creation? Like, I'm going to try this, and then maybe something or someone came later with the dominant genes, you know? So it's like, this is sort of a throwaway. I'm going to try and practice, and then we have Dahl. I mean, I sort of feel bad that it's all these multiple recessive genes. Like, that is bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think that's still part of the mystery, and I'm really fascinated by what direction they could go in with this, that aspect of it being Soong, and where they could go with this. And it makes me wonder, is there going to be a point where we see a live action doll? Could that be something of a possibility in a future Star Trek show, especially when we're talking? I mean, I'm not saying I would hope for it, but I'm just saying, is his character one of these type of characters because of what they're establishing with this character now? Could this be one of those characters that somehow translates and they move him to a live act? We see a live action, an actor playing that role. And an older version of that character. I think that would be that there's a potential there to be very interesting and tell some interesting storylines there with that as well.
Yeah. So, and then also just, I wanted to point out, like, Soongs have been so focused with AI that this is sort of a different branch of, this is like a real person with these, you know, augmented genes. So that's interesting because, you know, when you think of Soong, you think of Data's, and then you think of Daj. You know, and because they all look alike, right? All of the Data's look alike. All of the Daj models look alike. So now we have this completely different, it's not AI, it's genetics. And so where are they going to take the Soongs? Are they going to branch them off everywhere?
Here's my one question of where the genetics could come in. I mean, let's go back to Picard, where he was looking for a cure for his daughter. Is that maybe some of there's that subset of genetics that splits off because of that?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. And so make her disease or whatever be lessened by doing recessive genes.
Correct.
Huh. Okay. I see a good connection. I like that.
So the Romulans, Amy, we're in the neutral zone. We have tension. Janeway not allowed to go after the protostar. She's not too thrilled about this recent development, but the Romulans have kind of free access to the protostar, and they try to take full advantage of it in this episode, leading to the point where we get a new security officer for the protostar even.
Yeah, we do. So what I loved about that was, again, loved seeing the female Romulan. That was pretty cool, and she kicked ass. But Jellico telling Janeway, by no means, nothing. You are not going in there. Don't even think about it. And he has it just brought back chain of command, and we're going to go to four shifts, and you get in a uniform, Troy. It just all came back with that firmness, that, you know, just Jellicoe all the way. And I loved it. And it was like, oh, so good.
Yeah. O'Connor, not really appealing himself to everybody in this episode. Kind of just bails on everybody. Typical O'Connor move, but still. I thought we'd see him around a little longer than what we did.
Well, we knew that we wouldn't. I mean, he's our lovable scoundrel. What I did love was him recounting the story from TNG, you know. That was so cute.
Yeah. Another thing, let's talk about it. Murph. We get to see Murph actually in his new form spring into action. They've definitely, the Murphamorphosis has definitely given him a lot of new abilities here.
Yes. You know, walking around, stumbling around. I don't know. Was there phasers or was that Murph? No,
he had phasers. He was holding phasers.
Okay. So I didn't think that was him doing that. Cute as a button. And of course, O'Connor, with his ingenuity, put him in a little hamster ball and away we go.
What I liked about this too, development, is if they're going to make Murph kind of this security officer, and you could even see it with the character of Rock Talk, getting excited that she can focus more on her science now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool. I think actually that Rock Talk is the character for a lot of younger kids to really identify with and get motivated by and stuff like that. So I was happy to see that development as well here. So,
you know, with Rock Talk, I really enjoyed, at the end when she just was so excited. I get to do my engineer log now that we have this security.
My science log now that we.
I don't have to be security. But what I realized was Rock Talk, the voice actor, Riley.
Alazraki.
I'm sorry if I mispronounced it. But my goodness, I really believe that Riley, do I dare say, at least for right now, is the best voice actor. How she, I feel, changes some of the words that just makes Rock Talk's character stand out. Her inflection, how sometimes she slurs the letters of the words and sometimes she's very distinct. Like, there's something about Riley's performance that is so endearing. I automatically relate to Rock Talk. So I'm just giving credits to Riley Alazraki for her voice acting.
Well, and that's a good transition into the cast. I mean, it's pretty much our usual group. John Noble, always amazing in his role as the Diviner. But we talked about Admiral Jellicoe, Ronnie Cox voicing Admiral Jellicoe in this episode. So, and Billy Campbell also back as O'Connor. So a lot of fun things there. The voice cast, I think, for the most part, continues just to do a phenomenal job. I think Brett Gray as Dahl was really well done in this episode too, reflecting the emotions and the different things Dahl is going through. I love too how he inflicted his voice changes as Dahl was mutating. He'd activate. That's not an easy thing to do for a voice actor.
Yes. And like, you'd hear the Telluride, you'd hear the Vulcan. Like, it was, yes, that was a very good part. Yeah. And I'm still with Essentia. I cannot hear Jamila Jamil. And I'm like, what? That's pretty amazing. She's got to be a good voice actor because I don't recognize her voice. Like when I watched her in the sitcom, The Heaven one with Ted Danson.
Oh, yeah. The Good Place.
Yeah. The Good Place. Yeah.
Yes. I do have some trivia and tropes too for this episode. We're going to have a little fun here. All your powers combined, thanks to the dermal implant, Dahl briefly gains access to every trait of the species in his genetic makeup. This includes the telepathy from Vulcans and strength from Klingons, in addition to more benign physical changes like Andorian antennae. It's just a trip. And I wonder, Amy, if there's going to be a point where maybe they revisit this as Dahl gets older and maybe can access these abilities through his own aging process and maturing process.
You know, that is definitely something that should be explored. And wow, amazing for you to even say this. I'm blown away. But yeah, you can do that. You can, you know, look at your strengths and your weaknesses and focus on them and make them stronger and better. You know, I mean, that's how we improve. And so Dahl has this opportunity. You know, I feel like that the telepathy was more Beta Zed.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with that. And that the Vulcan was him being logic with the pointy ears. So when he was able to, you know, read minds and have that telepathy, I went Beta Zoid.
Yeah. A few other interesting things here. Of course, we had the cameo of Admiral Jellicoe denying Janeway's request to pursue the protozar and tells her basically to destroy it if it looks like the Romulans are going to seize it. So there's a lot going on there. Dr. Jago does identify Dal's creators as proteges of Dr. Eric Soon. Also mentions that Dal's base DNA source comes from a human augment. Eric having stolen a number of them when he went rogue.
So that had to have been...
That was Enterprise.
He
was introduced in season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise. Yep. So, among the species in Dal's genetic makeup is Proto-Organian, implicitly the still corporeal ancestors of the energy being Organians from Errand of Mercy. So I thought that was interested. I like how the Tal Shiar hit squad also is very similar to how they appeared in Picard with both their appearance and with their weaponry, keeping that string going. So
you're right. Yeah. The weapons that they had when they were, trying to get Soji. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about it with Murph. He took a level in badass when he metamorphosized. He's able to mop the floor with 3 Tal Shiar operatives thanks to his stretchy, slippery body, letting him attack with surprising speed. And of course, Gwyn crowns him the new security officer. So that's a little bit fun. The unreveal, though we now know what Dahl is, it doesn't necessarily explain why Starfleet has such a vested interest in his existence. The only immediate possibility is that he is a violation of their no transhumanism allowed policy, which is his very nature violates on several levels. There's also no explanation for why someone would create such a complex hybrid when the product is, by all appearances, a unique but otherwise fairly mundane humanoid. And it says here, however, if Dal actually had the capabilities of every species in his genetic makeup, Starfleet would no doubt take issue with an unknown party essentially breeding super soldiers.
Super soldiers. We've never seen that before.
What? Super soldiers? No, never. And finally, the wham shot when the protostar escapes once more. Ascensia goes to the Diviner's quarters and orders Dreadnought to activate, at which point it's revealed he's been this disguised as the table. She then activates an implant on her neck that shifts from Trill to Val Nakat, revealing the Diviner wasn't the only one sent back. Question for you, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Val Nakat are from the future, so they have a little bit more advanced technology. She's been there for at least a few years. How does Starfleet somehow not detect this one way or the other?
We really need to discuss this at the next episode because the whole timey-wimey thing is not adding up to my logical mind. And this is one example of what's not adding up.
Rule number one of time travel, as I've learned from a doctor in a blue box, the more timey-wimey it gets, the more confusing it is.
This is so timey-wimey. This is a little too much timey-wimey for Star Trek. Most of the time with their time travels, I can follow it. There have been some times that I've gone to the internet to go to smarter, more, you know, wise, timey-wimey experts. Picard with the 24th century and the, you know, the Confederation. I did have to go to lovely Dayton Ward, helped me out. And then the other time that I had to go help out was Star Trek 09. But I figured it out. I have not figured out Prodigy. So I'm going to have to go to some experts. So we can talk about that next.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit more to reveal. Yes. So, Amy, as we close up, anything else on this episode you want to bring up before we close up and get ready to do a little time travel of our own?
Well, let's go to a little counselor's corner with Miss Amy Nelson. Okay. Now, that lovely person, geneticist.
Oh, yes. The good doctor.
The good doctor. As promised to make you better, to bring out your best. So, Kyle, what would be one thing that you would be wanted to be brought out?
Okay, it was Dr. Jago. If I wanted something brought out in me, you know, I think it would be... This is tough because... I'm going to say this, and I think some people are going to take it the wrong way, and I don't mean it to be. I think that I would want the ability to be a little bit more conscious for myself, if that makes sense. I love helping the people I care about. I love being there for the people I care about, sometimes to my own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish... There were times where I had the ability to be just a tad bit more selfish in a constructive way, constructive for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes I wish I had more of an ability to say, I need to put myself first every once in a while. Every once in a while. I mean, yes, I could say, oh, I'll genetically engineer my brain. I will, you know, so I can be smarter and things like that. But I think for me, just as functioning in society and in society in general, I think on a very deep personal level, I think that would be something that I would want changed. And again, not to an extreme level, but just enough to where I can say, you know what? I don't feel uncomfortable saying I need this for myself or I need that for myself and do it in a way that's a balanced way. Get be able to balance myself more. That's probably a better way to put it, is be able to genetically to have the ability to balance, have a life balance more.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
What about you, Amy?
Nice. Wow, you went, pretty deep, a little deeper than I was going to go. So I have two. My first one was like very topical. My eyes are blue, but they're such a dark blue that people don't know what color my eyes are. So I would genetically change my color so that they were a lighter blue. That bright light blue, like Chris Pine's eyes. Oh,
now if we're going blue. If I'm going that right, I'm genetically six pack of abs. Come on.
Okay. Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. So that would be my eyes. I just I need that genetically changed, and as far as like. Deep counselor answer. I would like to bring out the more extrovert part where I can go to any party, not stand in the corner and talk to the plant, but feel comfortable and be that extrovert and talk to strangers openly and with fun. I have such a hard time with that.
But I'm going to tell you, Miss Nelson, I've been around you around some strangers for a little bit of time here and there and see what you do with podcasting and this. And I know it's a little different, but you do a good job of communicating with people. And, you know, the nice thing for you is that when people will get to know you and see how awesome you are, then it's just like, bam, and the floodgates open and there you go.
Well, thank you. And yes, I mean, Star Trek... People are not strangers. So,
yeah. Well, come on, you just charmed Vegas for a weekend. So, yeah, I know you made a lot of friends at the championship game. So,
I did. I mean, you can't help it. You go around high fiving everyone, turn around,
good energy, excitement. Yes,
yeah,
probably didn't make you meet too many USC fans that liked you too much, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, actually, the person who gave me the seat was an SC fan, and they had someone who couldn't come, and he offered it to me. So it was nice.
Oh, there you go. So with that, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, it's time to do some timey-wimey traveling as we head into episode 16 of Star Trek Prodigy Preludes. But first, here is what is happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And we are back here on the Union Federation Podcast. Hopefully you're enjoying everything. Not only the Fandom Podcast Network is putting out, but of course the great stuff over at the BQN Network as well. But we are here talking all things Star Trek Prodigy, Episode 16, Preludes. Episode aired December 1st, 2022. I cannot believe we're already in December, Amy. It's, this year has flown by.
Yeah, it has. And,
but We've got an episode. We got some timey wimey things to answer. We're going to find out a little bit more about our crew in some very interesting manners. But to do that, Ms. Nelson, would you care to give us the mission log?
Absolutely. As the crew of the Protostar repair the Proto Drive, each of them recounts how they got to Tars Lamora. Rock reveals she once was a fighter, often playing the monster in a carnival-like show, and was sold after she altered the script of the show and defeated the hero. Zero recounts how they were lured away from their Medusan exploration crew only to be captured by hunters, which I think were the Kazon. Jankum goes last and describes how he was awakened early from a cryogenic sleep on a Tellurite ship and repaired critical damage to the vessel, finally leaving in an escape pod so that enough oxygen would remain for the rest of the crew. On the Dauntless, Janeway discovers that the Protostar's crew are children as Essentia, also known as the Vindicator, and Dreadnought help the Diviner regain his memories of traveling to the past to locate the Protostar. Janeway becomes suspicious of their guest and head to Essentia's quarters, where she is knocked unconscious by the Diviner.
So, a very interesting, revealing and emotional episode of Prodigy. I'm going to be honest with you, Amy. Rock Talk's story was heartbreaking. That was a gut punch. But to learn a little bit more backstory about our crew is interesting. And I'm just also on the aspect of Janeway. I'm like, it's about time you got your head out from wherever you've been putting the oven or wherever you've been putting it, Janeway. Unfortunately, it might be a little too late here, but a very emotional episode of Prodigy.
Yeah, very much so. And I think very relatable. Like when you hear their stories, and I think we're hearing their stories at the right time. You know, we've gotten to know them. They're vulnerable. They know each other. They love each other. They respect each other. They've gone through this transition and now they are a family. And that's what gives them the courage to open up and tell their stories and not be ridiculed, not be afraid, you know. And it was the perfect time to learn about these two characters. And in part for me, I must say, you know, I've complained about Jank and Pog. I'm like, he annoys me. Why does he always talk in the third person? And now we have that answer.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that because I was going to ask you, do you feel like Jank and Pog's story has made him at least a little bit more relatable to you? Now you have a little bit more on his backstory and actually see the sacrifice he made to save his fellow Tellurites in this situation.
Yeah. I mean, I really have to, you know, echo what Gwyn was saying. I mean, he's a prince. I mean, he's royalty. He's what his sacrifice did that no one knows about and that he's not bragging about it either. I mean, it took us, 15, 16 episodes before we even knew that he had this integrity and this love of life that he's willing to leave his family and crew and his future for an unknown. Like that, seriously, he can call himself Jank and Pog for the rest of the episodes. I will be just fine with it. It really was endearing to hear his story.
What I thought was interesting too, at least with this, because we got a couple different perspectives. Obviously we got each of the crew's stories, but we also got the story of the Vindicator and the Diviner and with that. But as far as the crew of the Protostar, they weren't happy stories for the most part. Or in the aspect of like Jankum making the sacrifice to save everybody, only to be obviously we all know where their fates lay ahead at that point. But even then, you know, he saves everybody, but then he makes the sacrifice to leave his people, Zero, just out with her people exploring and gets captured just because. And then here you have Janka or Rock Talk, who's just this innocent life form at this point. She hasn't been educated up because of the time difference or anything like that. Makes a friend and just basically because she did something a little different, gets punished for it. And you can see where like the hero really is emotional about what happens to Rock Talk in this. And I'm very curious if we maybe somewhere down the line wouldn't see that character again. I would love to see that happen where Rock Talk gets reunited with the hero, because I think it would be a really emotional episode.
Mm-hmm. I agree, because Rock Talk definitely, I mean, that was her friend and was surprised when the script was flipped, you know, when she flipped it and was like, I want to be the hero. And but again, that sort of doesn't show that level of intelligence to understand what was going on and like why Rock Talk would change the script without even talking about it. You know, so it's like, yeah, she is just this little child and didn't want to have those feelings of, you know, scaring the audience members and being this monster. So very relatable. I can see so much connection with that. Absolutely love it. And yeah, I would love to see because one other thing I wanted to say is that both Rock Talk and Jank and Pog have really healthy ways of looking at their past. Like at the end of the story, you know, it's like, oh, that's so sad. But then Rock Talk's like, but if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't have found you, right? Like, that happened in the past, but now look at what I have, and that I wouldn't be here without those experiences. Very, very healthy. And for Jank and Pog, is just not staying in the past and not saying, I gave up so much and being angry about it, but all right, I'm an engineer. I'm not the best, but this is what, you know, I did. Very healthy ways of moving, not even moving on, but accepting your past for what it is.
Now, speaking of the past and the future, we're going to get a little timey-wimey here, because let's talk about Ascension, also known as the Vindicator, as well as the Diviner, because we learn a lot in a very short period of time. As the Vindicator kind of tells her story in this episode as well, we learn what happened with the Protostar and Chakotay, which is a pretty big reveal.
Do we though?
Well, in a way, yes, because we learn that the Protostar goes through this wormhole, and it obviously was more than just a change of location wormhole. It sounds like it was a time wormhole too, because it sounds like the Protostar ends up in the future with this with this race, and because they've been betrayed by Starfleet and their feelings for it, they're looking at using the Protostar as a revenge weapon, because Starfleet wouldn't get involved on their planetary conflict, Starfleet following the Prime Directive, not getting themselves involved in this case. And they blame Starfleet for the destruction, for not getting involved in the destruction of their world. And we see where they've captured the Protostar. They're planning to use it. They've got the crew captured. And we see Chakotay escape. And then he sends the Protostar back with no way of finding it. And then we see where the Diviner and the Vindicator go, and several others go back and through the wormhole, which is unstable, and they all end up in different time frames and different spaces. And like for the Vindicator, it had been like 10 years, he said, for the Diviner, but the Vindicator, it had only been 3 years. Because they talk about the age difference now between them. They were the same age when...
Yeah, okay. So... That was a lot, Kyle.
Yeah.
And there's many questions that I need to stop you. And so let's go back.
Okay. So
Chakotay at the so Voyager has come home.
Yeah.
And how many years after Voyager is Prodigy?
I want to say it's probably like at least 5 years or so.
All right. So let's call this the end of Voyager time.
Yeah.
Chakotay takes the Protostar. On his missions, they get in this wormhole event, and they end up at the Valnakot area. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that is also a time jump?
That's how it's appearing to me, is that it is a time. The Protostar took a time jump to the further part of this planet.
Yeah, and don't know if I agree with that, because...
It might not necessarily be a time jump per se. They might have gone to what current time on that planet.
Okay, I think that makes more sense. So yeah, we're still in end of Voyager time, and they go to the wherever the Valnakot. They're in the Delta. Is that
Valnakot? I believe the Delta? Yeah.
Okay.
Or the Alpha. It might be the Alpha.
Okay, so they go to the Valnakot. Now, the Valnakot have had decades of not good life with Starfleet. Yeah. And that's when the Diviner and the Vindicator are like, ooh, Starfleet is bad. And then the Protostar shows up and they're like, okay, we're going to take it over. So they capture it and they take Chakotay and imprison him. And then they somehow decide in their technology that they can go back. Okay.
Yeah. So let me explain this. This is a little what I call Farscape 101, because wormholes were a huge part of Farscape, which is one of my all-time favorite science fiction shows. The basis of a wormhole is not only are you traveling great distances, if something goes wrong in a wormhole, you could pop out at a different time too. So you're traveling through time and space when you're going through a wormhole. Now, what they said in the episode was that Chakotay breaks free before they can man the Protostar and take it to Starfleet to take them. And he launches the Protostar on automatic pilot with no idea of where it's going in time or space through this wormhole, because the wormhole had become unstable. So what the Diviner's race comes up with is that they're going, several of them volunteer to go through this wormhole and try and find the Protostar. But they all end up either dying or popping out of the wormhole in not only a different place per se, but a different time period. The Diviner when the diviner arrives, it's like for him, 10 years pass before he finds the protostar.
Okay. So there is time jumping, but it's not hundreds of years.
No, like it's not hundreds
of okay. years.
We're, I
okay,
think we're talking
okay, that's most, making more sense now.
We're talking at most, I think the Diviner said 10 years, which right. explains why he looks older now than the Vindicator. Because the Vindicator makes a comment about, we're not the same age anymore.
I know, and that, because, oh, the Diviner must have gone back
He went back 10 years, where the Vindicator said she only went back 3 years.
Oh.
And then she infiltrates, in that 3 years, she infiltrates Starfleet.
Okay. This is making sense.
So this is, again, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, but also wormholey kind of thing. So between my love of Doctor Who and then Farscape, it does kind of register in my brain a little bit more
right.
than not. But so that, but that's basically it. Because of the wormhole that they went back through was so unstable, they popped out at different time frames.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. while it took to Diviner, it may have been 50 years. He might have said 50. I need to go back and rewatch the episode. It was either 10 or 50 years. He either said 10 years or 50 years, which again explains the age difference. Because if you look, the Vindicator is very young looking, while the Diviner is in the Diviner. Well, yeah, it's got to be 50 because Gwen's like a teenager. So I would say it's 50. So then the Diviner brings up the fact that he grew because of the time difference. That's why he broke the rules and created his prodigy, because he didn't think anybody else was coming.
And he felt that he was going to be dying. Okay. Cause he's older. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's if you remember right when Prodigy first started, he was not in the best of health.
Right. Right.
So we've got all this and it comes together. In the meantime, we've got Janeway, who's starting to figure out ask some legitimate questions. They're all kids, you know, why are they wanted? And who's this Diviner that's put up this reward for them and things like that. And of course, by this time, it's too late. The Diviner has his memories back. Janeway walks in, sees Essentia in her true nature in the Vindicator, sees the Dreadnought, and the Diviner. The episode ends with the Diviner knocking out Janeway and probably going to be looking to take over the Dauntless here, which not going to be a good thing.
Yeah, that's so. We're going to have awesome battle between the Dauntless and the Protostar.
But here's the question though, because technically, because of the construct that the Diviner's race put on the Protostar, it makes any contact with anything Starfleet, it's going to sabotage it.
Yeah.
So the question is do they still continue to run from it because they don't want to establish it? I think this is the big thing that's still hanging out within Prodigy this season. Is the big question is how does Vice Admiral Janeway communicate with the crew of the Protostar, and how do they work their way around this? How do they get rid of this construct? Things like that. And we have 4 episodes left in this season to do that. So that's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. I want to hit up a little bit. The cast is pretty much this. We've got the same cast, everybody back again. They're just doing a phenomenal job with this, but I do have a few Easter eggs and tropes here. Part of the hatred of the Order is motivated by Sullen being left alone by the Federation until they've sorted out their civil war on joining them. This is in spite of the fact that the conflict was motivated by a belief that Starfleet had nothing of value to offer their people. So this is the they felt they were so advanced, but they were mad that Starfleet didn't help them in their war. So that's where that starts comes from.
Yeah, that is a huge trope again. The social commentary of, are we going to accept the diversity or are we going to exclude the diversity? And yeah, this non-interference, like. No.
And when they bring this up, according to Essentia the Vindicator, the Diviner is one of the people that wanted Sullen to join the Federation, that they refused to take a side in the Civil War over this choice that devastated their world, completely flipped that opinion.
Yeah, because it's interesting that, yeah, we learned that the Diviner was all gung-ho for Starfleet, and that is interesting.
Yeah. There was one other thing I wanted to bring up here from this. According to the Diviner, the reason Gwen betrayed him is because she met a boy. Dal's failed rescue in the mid-season finale evidently left an impression.
So yeah, you know. I did not like that he said that. And I'm like, okay, typical person who's not accepting his part in the role why Gwen, you know, turned. It's not because he met a boy. That, again, is assuming that there's something between them two, and I don't see that. So.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. There's a couple other things I want to hit on here, too. Of all the places the ProStar could have wound up, it happened to be right on Solemn's doorstep after they had a reason to hate the Federation. You know, popping out of that wormhole, bam, right there on Solemn. That's just something that I do find kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I found, when Gen Con was sent out on the sleeper starship with 29, they were all orphans. I'm like, that's
a pretty
heavy thing.
Okay. Yeah, they said, so as an orphan, they were shipped to the Delta Quadrant. What civilization, who does that to little kids? Just ship them off somewhere.
Okay.
That's terrible.
This should clear up some things. So the Protostar encountered a temporal anomaly being flung into the future after Solemn had already been decimated by their civil war. So they did go into the future. It was captured and outfitted with the living construct, but before they could launch it, Chakotay set the autopilot and remotely piloted it back into the temporal anomaly, leading it to eventually landing on Tars Lamora. Chakotay's fate from that point still is not yet revealed.
Right. Okay. So the Chakotay. So the Protostar goes back unmanned, lands, and is it Tars Lamora?
Yeah.
And that's where they find it. But the diviner at that point, he was the lucky one that found the Protostar because he went through the anomaly. He went through the wormhole and magically was there at the time.
Yeah.
Or that he went back even further, but landed at Tars Lamora, and that's where he was getting all these orphans and was building that.
Yeah, well, he was getting all these people he captured around him in the Alpha Quadrant, and was building Tars Lamora, and he happened to find the Protostar in Tars Lamora. Let me continue here.
But that's in the Delta Quadrant.
No, it was the Alpha Quadrant. Tars Lamora's in the Alpha Quadrant.
Okay,
you're thinking Delta with Voyager. Nothing to do. That's why you're getting. Everything that's happened in Prodigy is the Alpha Quadrant in the beginning. Tars Lamora is in the Alpha Quadrant.
Oh, yeah, Tars Lamora is in the Delta. Because that's where they get shipped to.
The Tellurites were going to the Delta Quadrant, but when Jankum gets captured.
Then picked up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that takes him to the Alpha Quadrant where Tars Lamora is.
Thank you.
Let me continue on this to clear it up a little bit more. The Diviner and Essentia, known as the Vindicator, are part of a group known as the Order, dedicated to destroying the Federation. After Chakotay threw a wrench into their plans, 100 ships, each containing one Vow Nakat and one Dreadnought, were launched into the temporal anomaly. Most were destroyed, and those that weren't were spat out in random places and times. The Vindicator arrived a mere 3 years ago and infiltrated Starfleet, joining Janeway's crew, while the Diviner has been searching for 2 decades.
Okay.
So we're dealing with the wormhole temporal anomaly. So, yeah, everything's wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, which does leave for some confusion. But that kind of at least clears it up to where we know, yes, the Protostar and Chakotay were thrown into the future. I'm guessing the Chakotay is probably still on the Diviner's home planet as a prisoner. That would be my guess. In the future.
So how come the Diviner, when he ended up at Tars Lamora and knew that the Protostar, how come he didn't launch the Protostar and send it to Starfleet immediately?
I think there was a reason why he didn't have any Star, he needed a piece of Starfleet tech to activate the Protostar, which he didn't have.
Oh.
Because I remember, it was something with the deltas that they found. Because he had
That goes to the point of why the Romulans last episode couldn't do it because there was no one on board or something.
Yeah, exactly. They had put it in sleep mode and without the deltas there. So, yeah, there's where we have that all kind of planned out. It's a very wibbly wobbly timey wimey, like you said, Amy. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be something we're definitely going to have to pay more attention to. The other thing about this episode too, it is a whole episode flashback episode, which tells me that the next remaining four episodes are going to get a little crazy.
Oh yeah.
So I'm excited. I love the path that Prodigy has taken to this point so far. I will still say this, Amy. I think the story that Prodigy is telling is the best week-to-week storyline that Star Trek has had in the modern era, because I think it's the most fascinating. I know there's been some really interesting stuff with Discovery. I treat Strange New Worlds as more of a weekly episodic type thing. Picard has been good, but I think the mystery involving the things going on in Prodigy and these characters, I'm just very intrigued by it, and I think it done the best job of fleshing it out and giving everybody a story within Prodigy in less than a half an hour.
Yeah.
Per episode too. So I really credit the writers on Prodigy for what they've done so far.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one thing I'm really want to see, and I hope we do see, and now after these two episodes, I think it could happen. So I'm going to give you just my hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So I think, how is Starfleet going to get the Protostar? I think Vice Admiral Janeway is going to get on the Protostar somewhere the kids are off or somewhere. Like, maybe this could happen next, that Janeway takes a shuttle, goes over, and then is talking to hologram Janeway and figuring things out.
Yeah, no, I think that is very much a distinct possibility.
I want to see Janeway talk to Janeway.
Yeah, I think that's coming. Whether it's she somehow gets on the Protostar or the kids rescue her, even. They somehow rescue her in one way or another. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. And I'm very excited. We got four episodes left of this Prodigy. So we should be done about New Year's with Prodigy, which means we'll have a little bit of a break in Star Trek because we won't have Picard until the middle of February.
Right.
So, but we've got plenty to talk about. Is there any other points you want to make up, talk about on this episode or bring up before we close out of this wonderful episode of Union Federation, Ms. Nelson?
Nope. We had a great discussion, and thank you for helping me out with that timey-wimey stuff.
Yeah, my head hurts a little bit now.
Oh, my God.
Maybe that's what I should have had augmented. Wormhole knowledge, please. Well, with that, we are going to wrap up this episode of the Union Federation. So let's open up some subspace signals. And of course, first and foremost, you can find the Union Federation on the Fandom Podcast Network, whether it's on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com for all of our audio podcasts, or you can go to our YouTube channel to find the video versions of these wonderful shows. And of course, you can go on to the BQN network as well to find the stream for the Union Federation as well, as we continue our wonderful partnership with BQN. Of course, to make sure to check out the Union Federation's Twitter page at Union Fed Pod. And of course, the Facebook page for the Union Federation, where we keep you updated on all the Star Trek and Orville happenings, Union Federation on Facebook. You can email us directly at theunionfederation@gmail.com. Of course, you can find me, Kyle, on Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, who is still recovering from his down under journeys, he can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And of course, our lovely science officer and phaser girl extraordinaire. Still on the mend, but we hope to have her back soon. We miss you, Haley. You can find Haley on Twitter at Trekkie01D. And Amy, where can people not only find you, but all the wonderful happenings of the BQN?
Well, we are having some fun times over at BQN. I'm co-hosting All Good Things. It talks about all of Star Trek. We're doing some great series, had some great discussions. And we brought in a new co-host, Mr. Kelvin, over in Manchester, UK. is now on All Good Things with me. So great to have him there.
Did you warn him he must take a ride on the Union Federation before he gets fully indoctrinated?
I will get him on, yes. Talking about timey-wimey, that's very difficult trying to figure a time when, you know, we've
Trust me, it's even worse when it's on Australia. I think where Kevin was, it was a 12 and a half hour time difference.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So I'm also on Galaxy Class, which talks about my favorite Next Gen Star Trek series, Next Generation. And I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but you can find me on Facebook in our groups. And also, we are doing a little hosting of the Hive Mind for our patrons and listeners. And that's going to be happening on Saturday. So,
and of course, you can find the BQN on Twitter at BQN Podcast. And they have a lovely Facebook group, the BQN Collective.
That's Twitter and Instagram.
And Instagram for BQN Podcast. And just remember, the BQN will assimilate you. You have no say in the matter. So just learn to deal with it. Of course, as we look ahead to the Orb of Prophecy, the next episode of Union Federation will be episode 153, and we'll be diving into Star Trek Prodigy season 1, episode 17, Ghost in the Machine, and episode 18, Mind Walk. Mm. And just for a little bit further out, episodes 19 and 20, which will be the last episode of the season, will be a two-parter. So keep that in mind. And of course, as we mentioned, Star Trek Picard coming February 16th, 2023. We are still waiting on an official start date for Discovery Season 5, as well as Strange New World Season 2, and whatever other stuff Star Trek might have up the Paramount Plus sleeve. That's a whole other issue we're going to have to discuss on a later episode of the Union Federation, because that's going to get really interesting, I think, in the year 2023. So, but with that, Amy, thank you so much for joining me on this. It's been fun to talk Prodigy with you. It's been two very interesting episodes. Hopefully we will have Mr. Reitzel back next week, because I still want to get his opinions on the Murphamorphosis.
Yes.
Make him get him caught up on things. And I think we're in for a very exciting final few episodes of this season of Prodigy. I cannot wait. To all of our wonderful listeners, thank you so much. We hope you had a great Thanksgiving as well. Lots of Star Trek stuff to give thanks for, and just have a great holiday season as we're moving forward. But you know, we'll be back in a couple of weeks to cover those next two episodes of Star Trek Prodigy. Until then, hailing frequencies are now closed.